podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Talking Point as we look ahead to the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, and it's a very special episode today. Here is what's coming up on today's show. We take a look ahead to the Azerbaijan Grand Prix as Formula One returns to Baku. Sam Cooper has the chance to speak to a Haas physio, and he'll also take us through his chance to play F1 Manager, the highly anticipated game that will come out at the end of August. And I'm pleased to say that joining me for today's episode is Planet F1 journalist Sam Cooper. Sam, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. You've been a busy man, but we'll come to that a little bit later on.
Yes.
So let's start off by talking about Baku then. A bit of time has passed since Monaco now, and it's already looking like Ferrari need to bounce back this weekend, don't they?
It is, yeah. It's only been 2 weeks, but already it seems like a lifetime ago since Monaco. Yeah, the story of the season's massively changed just in the past month or so, and it's very much Red Bull in the ascendancy, and it's, I think, most worryingly for Ferrari, it's not just Verstappen who's in the ascendancy. Perez is winning races now. So yeah, I think for them, this time a month ago, they probably couldn't have foreseen their fortunes going into this race being as they are, but they need, I think Leclerc in particular needs a race he can be proud of, as the signs. But yeah, the Ferrari, it's a case of now or never, especially with Mercedes creeping up behind. So I think, yeah, there's work to do in Baku.
Yeah, Charles Leclerc did take a shock pole position in Baku last year as well. I don't think anyone was expecting that. And so he has got the form round there, even if he did have that that crash at Turn 8 that was the sort of infamous I am stupid radio message a few years ago.
Yes, yeah, he does. And I think, unfortunately for Charles, he's getting one of those reputations, or especially stats-wise, that he does often get it on pole, but it's not being able to convert it into race wins as of yet. I mean, if you look at the number of poles he's got and the percentage of those converted into race wins, it's very low. So
yeah, I think the stat there is that he's got the same number of pole positions as Max Verstappen, but I think 20 fewer wins.
Exactly, and that just tells you everything you need to know. I mean, granted, he hasn't had as fast a car as Verstappen's had over the last few years, but Verstappen hasn't had a race-winning car other than last season and this season. So he's shown he can make the most of, well, capitalising on situations where his car isn't the quickest. And so far, Leclerc has had the quickest car in certain tracks, and he hasn't, for whatever reasons. Granted, I'm giving him a pass at Monaco because that just wasn't his fault. It was Ferrari as a team. But yeah, I think it's one of those stats you won't be proud of, and he wants to start converting those poles into at least a podium place. Hopefully he'll win.
Yeah, exactly. But let's move on to Red Bull now. Sergio Perez, supposedly the sort of man in form on the grid, isn't he? He's looking for his second victory in a row, not just in Formula One, but in Baku as well, after taking victory last year. And he, with the new contract in place, he just looks like, different driver, really, doesn't he?
Yes, what a turnaround for me. If you think back to that race in, I think it was the last race of the 2020 season, he had no seats, and then now he's one of three members who are going for a title race. And I think it's very interesting for Red Bull because they haven't been in this situation since probably Daniel Ricciardo left in 2019, where they've got two drivers who can win races. And I think it's still clear that Verstappen is their favourite. Why would you upset your golden goose when he's younger than Perez and he's already a title winner? But I remember Christian Horner said last week that he said Red Bull as a team don't really care who wins the Drivers' Championship. I don't think that's that true.
that remains to be seen. Like, wait until we get to, say, like Brazil and see if that still rings true.
Yes, I think there's, in terms of the future, there's a lot more to invest, as they have done with Verstappen. So, but yeah, Perez is the man in form now. I think it's interesting to see the way their camaraderie between Verstappen and Perez is, because they've shown, unlike, I think the most obvious example is always Rosberg Hamilton in 2016. It just seems the complete opposite. But we're only seven races into the season. Like, we all know how tensions can flare as the season goes on. So yeah, at the moment, Perez can just enjoy it. And yeah, if he can produce another, if he can become the first driver, I think, to win two races at Baku, then yeah, he'll be in the championship lead, you presume, depending on what Verstappen does. So yeah, that'd be a new position for him and Red Bull.
Yeah, it's a tale as old as Formula One, isn't it? Teammates sort of competing for race wins. It always starts off friendly, but who knows how that'll pan out in the next few races. But looking ahead to Baku itself, you've already touched on there. There's not been a repeat winner around there, and it's always produced good races. I mean, it's only came onto the calendar in 2016, but it's a pretty popular race, I think.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it takes a lot of the elements of Monaco and sort of ramps them up a bit. So you've got, I think, yeah, the you've got the speed that Monaco doesn't have. You can have the overtaking. It's also such a pretty track as well. I mean, driving past that famous castle, like, yeah, it's a very scenic track. And yeah, it'd be interesting again to see these 2022 cars with their big width, their bulkiness, how they get around the tighter sections of the track. But yeah, it is a race that's been enjoyable over the last few years. Hopefully there's another one this Sunday.
So Sam, let's move on to your feature interview then. You have been a very busy person this week. Who have you had the chance to speak to?
I spoke to Nikolai Madsen. He's part of the physio team for Kevin Magnussen at Haas. And he along with his colleague, were given the hard task of getting a driver ready for F1 in the space of a week. So as you can imagine, it was an unbelievably hard task and one that impacted his neck most of all. But yeah, it was a really good chat to get a better understanding of what makes an F1 driver be able to perform, really.
Let's take a look.
If I can go to the very start and say, what's like a typical training routine for an F1 driver?
I think there's a lot of difference between the drivers, but for Kevin especially, it's a lot of, neck exercises, core exercises. So I think there's many ways to do it, but me and Thomas try to make a schedule, a plan for Kevin and his training in Denmark also. So in Denmark, it's usually we have one session a day with treatment before and maybe after, just to get him loosed up again and ready for new training. But yeah, Kevin only had 1 week to get ready for Formula One. So, and it will take approximately 4 or 5 months to get in F1 form. So we were a little bit busy. Mm-hmm. So it was a hard balance to train Kevin in the start. But now it's okay. It's better now. So yeah, a lot of hard exercises, especially the core and the neck and, the shoulders, and tries to do it so specific to the car. So try to imitate the way he is sitting in the car and what about in the turns, what does Kevin do with the neck, and try to work with that. So, yeah, I think a lot of people at the clinic, we have a fitness center where Kevin is training. I think a lot of people just laugh when they see me and Kevin trains, because I'm just pulling his head down and just try to rotate it and hold him like this for minutes. So yeah, they're laughing a lot.
I can imagine. Yeah. So you mentioned a bit about, obviously Kevin came into the sport so late, like what kind of level of fitness was he at before? And like, how do you even approach that? You say you've got a week to get a driver ready for an F1 race. How did you go about that?
Yeah, it was. Thomas contacted me 1 week before he doing the tests. So I was just like, okay, we need to train Kevin hard, but not too hard, because he's going to get in the car. So it was hard to find the balance, but he was in actually okay shape. Form from the last 1.5 years in IMSA, and so he was okay, but it's so different from other racing. Also in after the race in Bahrain, his head was just locked all the time. So yeah, we treated him for 4 or 5 hours between the quali day at Saturdays and Sunday's race. And Thomas, the owner of Pro Treatment, who also works with Kevin, was in Saudi Arabia with Kevin. And he texted me a picture of Kevin with tape all over his neck and head. And he said to me, Kevin, after the race, I can't move my head with tape on. But after I took the tape off, I couldn't move it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So it was a very hard balance between treat training. So he gets the most out of the training, so he could perform, but he couldn't be sore or have muscle soreness during the weights or qualies. So yeah, it was intense. And I think Kevin, obviously he knew how hard it is to drive a Formula One car, but I think he was a little, he was like, oh, damn, it's so hard. I have forget that. Yeah. So yeah, but he is competitive. So you don't hear him to say, oh, I can't drive, but I could see in his eyes. And when he looked at me, he was just like, yeah.
So do you think he's up to speed now? Or do you think there's still a bit, he's like, especially in about the neck, do you think he could do still a bit more work?
I think he always can do a bit of more work. Mm-hmm. So I think everyone can, but he is way better now. And we have worked very intense during the day offs in Denmark with, yeah, sometimes two sessions, training and a lot of treatment, but he's in a good shape now. And I think it's different because, the track, the circuit is so different. Mm-hmm. So Jeddah is a very hard track. Imola was okay. Barcelona was also okay. Miami was quite hard because no one have driven it before. So he's on his way back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was going to ask that about, is there a particular track that is just known as being like physically grueling? I think Singapore gets mentioned a lot, but maybe that's due to the heat. But is there one that specifically puts like so much pressure on the driver's body?
It's more like the turns. Mm-hmm. For example, I think it's turn three on Barcelona is hard because they have to hold the head. It's a long turn. But I think, yeah, Singapore, as you mentioned, all the races where the heat is crazy, that's the hardest races. But I think just like Imola was okay, I guess Miami was quite hard, yeah. But I think Singapore is the hardest race for the F1 drivers, I guess. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just thinking about a race weekend, like what kind of exercises do you do that? Is it quite light? Because like you said, they're in the car for a long time. Is it just mainly warming up kind of exercises?
Yeah. When we are in a race week, we normally, the days up to, we just train him quite hard. But during the race week, we don't have so much time for doing stuff like training. So it's more like trying to play some football actually, or juggle a lot and a little bit of exercise just to get him ready. So we are not completely kill him with exercises because he needs to perform. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, we can treat him a lot so he can get ready, but we can't. He can't have muscle soreness before training and quali. And so we are just doing some fun activities. In Bahrain, we played some paddle and some table tennis. Of course, I let him win. So some activities he can compete in swim contests or stuff like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like what kind of stats do you keep on the driver during a race? Like, do you find out how much weight they lose like per race? And like, if so, how much does that tend to be for Kevin?
I think it depends on the weather. Mm-hmm. At Barcelona, it was crazy. It was so warm. And so it's about 3.5 kilo. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot. And yeah, but yeah, it's so much about his how warm it is. And yeah, so I think it's some races, it's around two in a race. But yeah, it depends on the heat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And is there any like particular injuries that you find are common in F1 drivers? You mentioned about the neck. Is that something that is that the main area that you try to focus on to avoid any injuries in that kind of area?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, because I think F1 drivers don't have that injuries that football players have, you know. but of course the necks and the forearms as well, his wrist, his shoulders, and the core. So yeah, it's not like injury we know from other sports. They are pretty safe in the car actually, and don't have to perform so fast. So the injury is quite a low, but yeah, the soreness in obviously the neck is the hardest part. And yeah, a lot of headache and a lot of bad rotation in the neck is, yeah. But yeah, so I'm happy for my thumb. I don't think Kevin loves my thumb.
All right. Yeah. I was just wondering as well, do you deal much with his nutrition as well? And if so, like, what's the typical F1's diet really?
Yeah, I think it depends on how which driver you talk with, but with Kevin, we try, if it's a very hot race, very warm before Barcelona, I knew it's gonna be warm, so the days up to the training sessions at Friday, I just put a lot of water in him and stay hydrated. A lot of those taps, electrolytes, and about eating, he loves pasta pesto with salmon and vegetables. So so yeah, I talk with him about what do we want to eat and stuff like that, and then on the quali days and the race days. Quali days, there's FP3 and then quali, and before FP3 he gets some pasto, and between the sessions he's got a smoothie. It's easy to intake, so yeah.
And I was just thinking, in terms of, say, if a normal person just got into an F1 car and just even does a couple of laps, like, how exhausted would they be after that?
Oh yeah, it's crazy, because I have got that question so many times where people said, how can it be hard to drive an F1 car? And after I have trained with Kevin, when I just pushed his head and just hold his head for hours, it's so hard for the neck. Imagine you go from 350 kilometers to 50 in around some seconds. Normal people can't understand how hard it is. So, yeah. And Kevin is a good example of the training. It's important because obviously he only had 1 week and he was training before that, but not that intense and specifically on the necks and the cores and the forearms. So I think it's, no normal people can't imagine how hard it is. Even I cannot. So I talked a lot with Kevin about it. How is it to drive it? How hard is it? I know 2 hours is a long time in a car with a pulse on almost 170 or 150, it's a long time. And yeah, you know, with the driving suit and underwears, it's there's some factors some that really hits, you know, the warm, and you can't get out with the heat from your body. But the soreness in the neck is so intense. Yeah, I think in some of the turns it's about 8-9 Gs, so it's 9 times your body weight. So then you can try to put your work with the head in that. Yeah, it's crazy.
Do you think like a person off the street would even be able to do it in a lab? Because I remember there's so many clips of non-professionals trying, their head just gets shoved forward. Do you think even a normal person could even manage to do a lap for the physicality of it?
No, I don't think so. The hands device is helping, of course, but it's, I don't think I can do it. Actually, for some weeks ago, me and Kevin was training, and I was just like, oh, Kevin, let me try this and this, and he killed me. It was so hard. Yeah, so I don't think any... you need to have a lot of stamina as well, but the specific movement when you break, you have to hold your head back, and then you have to look at the apex in the turn. So you have to turn your head, and then the car is moving, so you have to hold it. So it's 3-4 different movements, and the neck is very, you have a lot of rotation and range of motion in your neck, so you all the time have to hold it. And yeah, you know, the porpoising in this season is crazy at all, so it's hard for the drivers with the porpoising as well.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how do you deal with that? Because obviously that was a completely unforeseen problem, that suddenly these drivers are bouncing so much. Is there anything you can do to sort of lessen the impact of that on the driver?
I can turn that, but no, it's not an exercise. But I talked with Kevin after, I think it was in Australia. He talked about, oh, he has some just like nerve pain actually going out in his arm and in his jaw. And I talked about it with him, and we kind of saw that, I think it was because of the bouncing. So the spinal cord just pushed all the time on. You see, on the nerves. And so we talked about it, and we tried to treat him out. I think Thomas treated him for 3 hours. But it's hard to train that bouncing stuff. But I think it's way better now. And yeah, the team has found a way to solve that also. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just my last question, I think Jessica mentioned you train other sports as well. In terms of like athletes, how highly would you rank an F1 driver? Because you mentioned it a little bit earlier that people sort of see F1 drivers and they don't think you have to be that physically fit. But I think we both know that it's a very grueling sport.
It is, yeah. Quite a high, actually. I think... it's a hard question because, yeah, I have worked with football players and athletes, but it's on a different level. It's more in F1, you need to, what can I say? I think they are very high, actually, because they need to have a lot of stamina, and they need to, it's just like if you take something you can hold in your hands and just squeeze it and try to squeeze whole body. That's how they feel when they drive for 2 hours. So I think they are very high, but of course other athletes are using other muscles, you know, like, yeah, football players, they are good at running. I think bicycle players are not that good. Bicycle riders are not that good at running. So it's hard to compare athletes, but in motorsports, F1 drivers is, I think F1 and MotoGP motorcycles is the hardest athletes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's all my questions. That's been really interesting, like, to learn a bit from the inside.
So a proper bit of time spent with Nikolai Madsen then, Sam. Like, he's a really interesting person, isn't he?
He is. Yeah. Yeah. Like, he's very open about what challenges him and Kevin faced and what, as a driver. And I think it was interesting from his perspective because he's trained football players as well. So when I asked him about how do F1 drivers compare in terms of fitness, he said that very high, because I think from the outside world looking in, you can obviously, you can be mistaken to think that F1 drivers aren't that fit because they just sat down for 2 hours, but it's the sheer forces that they're subjected to. And the fact that if you think you've got to keep your neck completely still whilst also going around a corner, looking at the apex and looking at 19 other drivers, making sure you don't hit them, then yeah, it's an unbelievably hard task. And to hear how he gets him and Kevin get funny looks when they're in the gym because he's pushing his thumbs into Kevin's neck, and how I think one of the funniest stories was they said they taped up Kevin's head, and like after they took the tape off, he still couldn't move his head. So yeah, it really sort of, it shows that it's not just 2 hours drive, it is a lot of pressure on your neck, and if you're not ready for it, you can't do it.
And it's the perfect explanation as to why a lot of drivers' necks are probably the same width as their head in some cases A really good chat with him as well. And adding to your busy week even further, Sam, you have had the exclusive opportunity to play the highly anticipated F1 Manager 2022. How was that experience for a start?
Oh, it was great. Yeah, I was invited up to Cambridge for Frontier developers who were making this game. And it was, I didn't really know what to expect going in. But I think if you're a football fan, you've dabbled in the Football Manager games. And it's of that same vein. We were dropped in the season pretty much this week, actually. It was the week leading up to the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. We were in charge of Alpine, and so you can customize your tactics. And I think there's so much more than just a race. So like, for example, like the week of gameplay that I got to experience was there'd been a new part that had been made, and I had to choose which, if I wanted to put on both drivers' car or just one of them. And then also you've got scouts scouting for new drivers. So they were suggesting this rookie from F3, and I wasn't going to replace Oscar Piastri from Alpine because that'd be a bit of a daft move, but I could have done if I wanted to. And then I think the game excels itself in the race, the race weekend, really. So you can be in charge for all three practice sessions as well as qualifying. I mean, for time purposes, I only had an hour to play, so we skipped forward to the race, but there's just a lot of elements to it. So before the weekend, I could speak to my sponsors, and they said, right, we'll give you more money if you think you can get to Q2 with one of your drivers, but if you don't, it will cost you money. So there's a bit of that risk reward thing, and I was fairly confident that an Alpine could get to Q2, so I did go for that extra money, and thankfully Alonso came P9 in the end. But it's sort of the stories that develop through the game. I think that's probably what most interests me, and I guess other people, is the graphics of it as well, I must just say, it's just so good. Like, it looked like I was watching an F1 race for so much of it. And then they've got some of the Sky commentators as well. So it's really that feel of an F1 event, really. And the cameras as well, I must say, like, you can switch between, so you can have like the standard camera you see on TV, where it just follows corner by corner, or you can literally go for the front wing or the rear-mounted headset of any of the 20 drivers on the grid, and it's the clicking through is seamless. Like, I was clicking between, in my race for example, Daniel Ricciardo had a spin pretty early on, so I was watching him even though he wasn't my driver. And then it's just the narratives that sort of build. Like, I was battling, so in my qualifying I got Alonso as P9 and Ocon was P11, so it's nowhere near the race lead. I think Verstappen and Leclerc were battling up for the race lead, but I just wasn't focused on that. I was just more focused on how can I make sure Alonso stays ahead. And I built myself a nemesis in Lando Norris, where he was constantly on my tail, and I was just like, I was burning through rubber, I was burning through my battery just to try and keep him off. And like, this seemed like it went on for about 4 years of my life just with him behind me, but yeah, it was probably about 3 or 4 laps, but eventually I got him. And that was the bit that made me really enjoy it, because we had beforehand, you set up your strategy saying, well, we're going to pit on this lap, we're going to change these tires, we'll do one stop or whatever. But with Norris, I thought, right, here's a chance to go for an undercut, I'll try and get a new pair of tires on, and hopefully you get stuck in traffic. And luckily it did. So I think that was the perfect moment of how much influence you can have on a race. And I think it was only like an hour, but I was just so stressed after it. So I could only imagine what people like Christian Horner and Toto Wolff are like every day of their lives, they got to deal with this. But yeah, I just thought it was a fantastic game. And I think it's one that you can get really stuck into from like the technical side of point of view, but you can also just really enjoy these like narratives that build up, I imagine, through a season, but in particular during one particular race.
Yeah, absolutely. And for that level of, you already mentioned the sort of gameplay and the graphics in that. For that to be in a manager game as well, that's a really big effort from them, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Like, I can imagine the amount of research that's gone into it is huge, because it's not just like, oh, do you want to replace your front wing? It's like, oh, what do you want to do to the front wing to replace it? What do you want to do to your side pods? And like, yeah, the level of detail that's gone into it. And they've got, you can see, I think one of the handy bits is you can, if you get a new part, you can put it on your car and then you can sort of rank it against the other team. So like, it's just generating this massive amount of data. And then, yeah, there's other bits as well. So you can do like contract negotiations. So I did have a look if Max Verstappen wanted to come to Alpine, he didn't. But yeah, it's stuff like that where you can, yeah, it's just the level of detail on both in the track and off the track. And it's something I'd be really interested to see, to get involved with through like a full season. Because obviously, like I said, I had an hour to play. We got dropped in for the Baku Grand for the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. So yeah, I imagine there must be quite a high level sense of reward that if you take a car, I don't know, someone who's not at the top of the grid, like, and manufacture it maybe over the course of one season, maybe over the course of another season until they are fighting for the championship, then yeah, I'd imagine that's similar to Football Manager when you take like Rafe Rovers to the Champions League. Like, there's probably the equivalent. Yeah. So I imagine, yeah, that level of detail and the ability you can have to make your team the best is probably one of the big selling points, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and we will look forward to that coming out on August the 30th on all regular gaming platforms. And Sam, thank you very much for joining me for today's episode.
You're welcome. No, not a problem.
And thank you to you, as ever, for either watching or listening to Talking Point. Be sure to head to planetf1.com to get caught up on all the news and views heading into the Azerbaijan Grand Prix this weekend. And we'll look forward to speaking to you after what happens around Baku.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.